Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is January 6th, 2021. The first calendar for me, at least, of this new year. So welcome to both counsel. We are proceeding by Zoom today, but the rules of court will remain the same. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. It's important that you note your appearance for the record when you begin your argument, and please be mindful of the time it's designated in the screen, which is my upper left-hand corner, not sure where it is on your gallery view. The first case for oral argument today is Richard Otto versus Janice Otto. Counsel for appellant, when you are ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. Thomas Braun on behalf of the appellant, Richard Otto. May it please the court, counsel. We are here before the court this afternoon involving a post-dissolution family law matter. The parties were divorced on March 27th of 2017. At the time, they were awarded joint legal custody with the appellant's parenting time to be designated by a parenting consultant. Vicki Duncan was appointed by the same order and eventually established parenting time for the appellant on an every other weekend basis. And appellant also had weekly parenting time with both minor children at the time. The parenting consultant's period or contractual period lapsed, and the court found that the parenting consultant was no longer contractually obligated to provide services. And at that point in time, the respondent stopped cooperating with the parenting time order that had been issued by Ms. Duncan. So appellant filed a motion for contempt, which was heard on February 7th, 2020, because at that time, his last parenting time was on October 18th, 2019.
Mr. Braun, before you go farther, I just want to make sure that I have this right. The existing or the prior existing parenting time order is dated back in March of 2019, correct?
Correct.
And that, I think you provided a copy of that in the addendum, and that includes both holiday parenting time and regular, I think, every other weekend and Wednesday night parenting time for your client. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And I take it that works out to be more than 25% of the parenting time.
Just above 25% of the parenting time when you're including the holiday time and the vacation time.
All right. So from your perspective, the change now to zero parenting time would constitute a restriction.
It certainly would, Your Honor. Yes. And when Mr. Otto petitioned the court and the hearing was held on February 7th, 2020, really the only issue before the court was contempt. And there were some ancillary issues involving compensatory parenting time as well. But there was no motion to change custody or to substantially restrict Mr. Otto's parenting time. When that hearing was held, there was no argument on behalf of the respondent to substantially restrict Mr. Otto's parenting time. So when the court issued its order on March 23rd, 2020, that completely stopped parenting time from Mr. Otto, that came at a complete shock and surprise to the appellant. And that's the first point that I would like to address with the court. And it's our position that the court committed an abuse of discretion by failing to address the 25% presumption of parenting time, which is clearly required under 518.175, and that the court's restriction going from roughly 25% to zero is a substantial reduction and restriction on his parenting time, which requires findings under Danielson.
But Mr. Braun, isn't it also fair to read the court's order to say, I'm not changing the existing parenting time order. I'm just saying it's conditioned on father attending therapy and the therapist agreeing that parenting time is in the minor child's best interest. Can't we read it that way to say this isn't a restriction or a change in parenting time at all?
I think paragraph 5C makes it very clear what the court's intention was, and which is how this has been played out, requiring joint therapy between dad and daughter before parenting time proceeds. And the quote is, joint therapy shall only begin upon father and Rose's therapist agreeing that joint therapy is appropriate given the counseling thus far. And then paragraph C goes on to further talk about the final decision regarding parenting time being made by the court. But there's the conditions that the court places in the interim requires him to engage in individual therapy, to engage in joint therapy. And until that happens, or unless the parties can agree, there is no parenting time, and there's no mechanism in this order for him to have parenting time. And we believe that without appropriate findings, that is an abuse of discretion.
So if I could jump in at this point and ask, I didn't see in the district court's order a subsequent hearing date, a review hearing. So I don't know if there was, it doesn't appear that there was something planned, that this was more of a final determination of the motions that had been made. What is your position on whether or not there was a review hearing scheduled, and what, if there was, what was the subject matter for that review hearing?
Thank you, Your Honor. That leads directly to my second point, which is that we believe this is a final order because the court did not schedule a review hearing, nor did it schedule an evidentiary hearing, which is required under the Niece-Peterson framework when there is a substantial reduction to parenting time.
So let me ask another predicate question here, because I think it's important to understand. There was no motion, as I review the record, I saw no motion to suspend father's parenting time, either temporarily or permanently. I saw no motion to suspend time. I saw no motion to modify parenting time. And I didn't see some kind of emergency motion. It seems like this was something that maybe the parties argued. Was there any oral motion at the time for suspension of parenting time? Because it didn't seem to be a written one.
No, Your Honor. And if you review the transcript from the hearing, all of the argument was centered upon contempt. And essentially, you know, is mother in contempt of the order for enabling the child not to have parenting time? So Mr. Otto was never on notice that his parenting time could be suspended temporarily, even, or in actuality, permanently at that hearing. And the court sua sponte made this determination based on the contempt motion. And
well, let me interrupt, because it seems like the contempt motion was a motion that father brought against mother. And in response to that, mother, there wasn't an evidentiary hearing on the contempt. There was no HOP hearing, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so it was the court sua sponte in response to a contempt motion to enforce current parenting time decided to suspend indefinitely father's parenting time.
That's the effect of the order, Your Honor, yes.
And what grounds are you aware of on which a court can deny a HOP hearing?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor. And the court, in fact, sua sponte, denied that HOP hearing as well by just simply denying father's relief and not hearing testimony on these important issues. And I think that it's really important when you look at this in the context of Niece-Peterson and some of the history of the court's cases like Kafka, where you have judges who suspend parenting time indefinitely without an evidentiary hearing. You leave parents in this parental purgatory of not having an ability to come back in and spend time with their children. And
well,
that's exactly.
If I could follow up on what you just said, because I have another, I'm curious, if we affirm the district court's order, and let's say a week or a day after the time for requesting review from the Supreme Court ends, right, as soon as possible, father brings a motion to modify parenting time or modify custody. What's the standard that the district court would apply if we affirm today? Is the standard now Niece-Peterson that father has to show endangerment?
Yeah, I think it is, Your Honor. I think we'd be back into 518.18 with father having 0% of the time and having to show emotional, physical, or impairment of emotional development. And that's why the refusal to at least order an evidentiary hearing under these circumstances is so detrimental to father, because it completely shifts the burden now back on him to prove that very high standard for modification of what would be an affirmed previous district court order. The record is just devoid of the justification for making this magnitude of a change, especially without any notice to father that essentially all of his parenting time was going to be suspended and or taken away indefinitely.
Setting Setting aside, Mr. Brown, the question of whether this should have been an evidentiary hearing as opposed to a hearing during which lawyers argue it, I mean, isn't it fair to say that the facts mother alleged in her affidavit would provide a factual basis for modifying parenting time, or maybe I should say imposing the conditions on the parenting time that the district court did?
I think that the facts alleged by mother in response to the contempt motion may have given rise for the court to make findings under the best interest test for a non-substantial change. I think when you move from 25% to zero, that you have to be within the framework of 518.18, which is alleging emotional, physical, or impairment of emotional development. And she was not alleging those facts. She was talking about difficulty in the relationship between father and daughter. There was no expert testimony with respect to her emotional state at the time. And frankly, dad and daughter had been experiencing roughly a year of parenting time on a regular basis. The only thing that had changed was now the absence of a parenting consultant that was holding the parties accountable. So I think the court could have made best interest findings to make a minor change, but the major change that was made by the court, I believe, requires that 518.18 analysis. And I don't believe that the current pleadings support, even if taken as true, that very high level of a finding that's required to make this major modification. It's also the position that the court abused its discretion in essentially deferring the determination regarding parenting time to the therapist. Here, the court's conditioning my client's parenting time on, number one, him obtaining individual counseling, that individual counselor must participate in discussion with the child's therapist. And then when both of them, and the court makes it very clear, it jumps off the page on page 13, the bold only, joint therapy shall only begin upon father and Rose's therapist agreeing that joint therapy is appropriate. This hurdle that the court puts in front of the appellant is not supported by any type of expert opinion. This is the court's own diagnosis of mental health issues that are present. And it essentially—
Had the district court said, instead of get into therapy, go and be assessed to see whether therapy would be appropriate, would the court be within its authority to do that?
I think the court could make a temporary order, which could require an assessment, and then have expert and ample opportunity to obtain facts to support an order like this. But unfortunately, that's not what the court did. It essentially put that hurdle in front of him. And frankly, if he didn't comply, or his therapist doesn't comply, or at this point, if Rose's therapist says joint therapy is not appropriate, then it doesn't happen. And you don't get to the next steps in this conditional parenting time order that essentially is permanent. So by doing that, it's the appellant's position that the court really abrogated its authority with respect to parenting time relative to father and daughter relationship, because ultimately it's the court's job to determine whether endangerment exists, to determine whether parenting time is appropriate, not daughter's therapist, not a joint therapist. I mean, the court should take those factors into consideration, but by placing just a hurdle in front of him that he has to clear those before parenting time takes place, and frankly, that he never has parenting time until that happens, I've never seen a case in Minnesota which would support such a restriction on parenting time and abrogation of the court's authority. And that's why I think that this—
Sorry, if I could interrupt. What contact is permitted?
Well, really the only contact that's permitted is through joint therapy, but only after the therapist, father's therapist and Rose's therapist, believe that that should start. So, I mean, this is almost a de facto TPR, because he's got no mechanism to have contact, to exert his joint legal rights. And he's left with this order unless and until it's changed. And it's been now a year and 4 months, and he hasn't had parenting time with his daughter. And to give a licensed social worker the keys to turning his parenting time back on, I think is an extremely dangerous precedent to set. And ultimately, you know, we also challenge the court's denial of the contempt findings, and there's ample evidence in the court's record to support the fact that mom was interfering with dad's time. The court just simply denied those without any real factual analysis. But really the large issue here is the denial of his ability to have parenting time without appropriate findings or an evidentiary hearing, because as this final order stands, this will be in place until she's 18. So we're asking for the court to reverse the district court's determination. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, I'm Carol Pasternak. I represent Ms. McHale in this matter. She is the respondent. I think that some of the issues here most of the issues here have been dealt correctly by the district court. I want to remind the court that the referee has been dealing with this matter since September of 2014. She knows these parties. This is back when the divorce was initially filed. It took 3 years for the parties to get to a divorce agreement, and they've been in court, if you look at the register of actions, many times since their divorce. This has been a contentious, difficult case. And I think that throughout, Ms. McHale has consistently been accused of doing everything possible to make this more difficult than it needs to be. There was a point, as my client explains in her affidavit, and that is reflected, I believe, in the order, in the facts of the order, that there has been parenting time between Rose and the older child before the older child graduated, Anna, where there was weekend time, there was weeknight time. And however, Ms. McHale's affidavit at the district court level notes that back in September of 2018, she began to see issues with their daughter, with her struggle with parenting time. She brought this to the parenting consultant. The parenting consultant talked to her about it, but delayed taking any action, delayed recommending counseling. So it wasn't until March of 2019 where counseling began with this child. So there was already almost a year of this child struggling with parenting time that—
Counsel, if I could, I'm sorry, Ms. Pestrick, I just wanna make sure I understand correctly. There might have been that year of struggle, but there was no motion that mother brought to suspend time, to modify parenting time, to require conditions on dad's time. This was a contempt motion brought by father, and in response, mother does make some motions, but there's no modification motion made.
That's correct. There was no modification motion for several reasons. The first was the parenting consultant who had been in place was in place until shortly after therapy began. Mother believed that with the help of the therapist, whatever the difficulties were would resolve. Mother has not at any point tried to vanquish or deny or obstruct parenting time.
Right, but I think that that's a fact issue that would have been the subject of a HOP hearing. My understanding of the way the HOP and Mahadi hearings work is you have to comply with the requirements when you make your motion requesting an order to show cause under the contempt, and the district court looks at your motion papers to decide if a HOP hearing is necessary. And basically all they're doing is, did you allege the right things? In other words, is there an order? Was there a violation? If so, then you have a HOP hearing to let mom establish, as you're saying, to let the mother establish the facts that you want to present, that there's a justifiable excuse for why there was non-compliance with the parenting time schedule, or there was compliance and it's just a false accusation, but there was no HOP hearing in this case either. right?
That's correct.
And I guess the main concern I have is I look at the briefs. It seems like you concede that this is an indefinite suspension of father's parenting time. In the brief, you write, appellant argues that his parenting time has been restricted by the district court sua sponte, and neither party was given an opportunity to provide input. And then you write, while this may be true, had appellant felt such input could be provided and that an evidentiary hearing should have been scheduled, a motion for amended findings could have been brought. So I don't see in the motion papers that you're arguing that this was a temporary decision or that the conditions placed did not modify parenting time. It seems like you're conceding that this was a de facto suspension of contact between father and the daughter in this case. Is that correct?
I don't think the court clearly said it was temporary or permanent. I think that the district court provided an opportunity that if the parties did not agree with what the counselor was, the counselors were determining as the steps to go forward, that if they didn't agree with counselors, they could return to court. I don't know necessarily that the court said there would be, as Your Honor brought up before, there was no review hearing scheduled. But as the court also mentioned, there was no specific suspension where the court came out and said, from now on, you will have 0% parenting time until the counselors determine what is best going forward. The way I read this order was, it was more of a, as I put in my brief, a roadmap to allow the parties to get to a point where the relationship issues were dealt with. And I think the court relied upon looking at the long game and looking at how we fix the problem versus do I schedule an evidentiary hearing? Do we have a HOP hearing? Do we have these other things? I think that the focus on this family was to try to resolve the problems versus, going through the counselors in the hope. And I would imagine, and I can't speak for the district court, but I imagine the court assumed this would be a short-term situation where the counselors.
Well, and Ms. Patronek, I'd agree with you if the court had set a review hearing or set some sort of a timeline on this. But, I don't know what, given the history between these parents, I don't know what would have led the district court to conclude that they, through the work of the parent, the individual and the parenting therapist, would reach some sort of an agreement about contact between father and the daughter. I mean, I just don't understand how this would be an appropriate exercise of the district court's discretion, given the history between these parties.
Well, I think that the court's intention was to take it away from the parties and hand it over to the professionals. Notably, I think the court makes some findings where the court finds that father may not be focused on the proper way to get around this, the way to heal the relationship. And I think maybe the court thought by introducing a therapist for father, someone to speak to him and someone, basically to advocate for him as to what his desires were in the relationship, and also to have that in conjunction with the child's therapist, who the child has had for several years. I think the court had hoped that maybe that marriage or that conglomeration might bring the parties to a situation where Rose would become more comfortable, and possibly instead of the court imposing, you get 1 hour this week and then you get 2 hours on Saturday and then in 3 weeks we'll try something else, not to perpetuate that litigation, but leave it, as counsel said, the court is not a mental health professional, leave it to the mental health professionals to build back the relationship and avoid further litigation. I think that would be the court's intention.
But, and that might make sense had there been an evidentiary hearing, but you go from having more than 25% of parenting time with father to having effectively none without a chance to present any argument, actually an argument even, let alone evidence on a change to parenting time, because there was no motion to do so, but without any chance to have testimony by experts and by the parties. How long would this order be effective given the fact that there's no review date and everything else?
I don't think there's a specific end date. I guess from my experience with this case, I assumed counsel would have brought a motion shortly after the counselors became involved, and either one of them could give an opinion. I guess the other option was to come through this court, which counsel chose to do.
Ms. Pasternak, I guess I'm also struggling with trying to characterize this district court's order as temporary or permanent. And one of the indications you can look at is whether there's a review hearing. You can look at some other indications. But the reason it's so important is because what happens next is kind of in play. If this is a permanent decision or indefinite or de facto indefinite suspension of time, then that means for father to change it, father has to show endangerment. So I guess my question for you is the same as with opposing counsel. What do you think is the standard that would apply to a modification motion when father is able to make such a motion if we affirm this district court?
I think that the intention of the court was to have the mental health people weigh in and start moving towards maybe a graduated parenting time schedule, something that would allow the child to be comfortable again with time with father. I guess I don't know if we are at a point where if you were to affirm the order, if that necessarily means that the parenting time is zero and that the modification would be endangerment. I guess the order, in my mind, the order isn't exactly clear. And again, I'm just focusing on what I think that the court's intention was that this would not be a long-term circumstance. This would be an opportunity for father and daughter to get into some counseling, clear up some of their differences, and begin to work back towards parenting time. The court might have been clearer with that in the order, might have set a review hearing or an evidentiary hearing. I imagine, I don't know if a review hearing would have satisfied counsel to show that this was meant to be a temporary hearing. The order doesn't necessarily say either way.
Doesn't the lack of clarity suggest a remand is the best course of action for this court, given the stakes of no parenting time at all versus more than 25% parenting time?
I guess I don't necessarily disagree. I think what's disheartening to me is that we're a year out and I don't know that we've affected any change in the relationship between the father and the child. I don't know that we've affected anything except to use a lot of litigation time and energy and not really get to the core of the matter and fix what I think the underlying problem is. Counsel and the courts may have a different view of that, but the underlying problem seems to be the relationship. And I would imagine whether or not Your Honors remand, we will be back at the district court level on a motion of some sort, I'm sure, sooner than later. So I guess I don't know necessarily whether a remand or the outcome either way is not going to put us back in front of the district court.
So I think I could ask a lot of questions and spend all afternoon. Let me ask one more and I'll be quiet. The question I have is, assuming that we're looking at the facts as your brief suggests we should, and making conclusions about whether or not endangerment has been shown, what authority is there that a child can opt out of a parenting time schedule?
I don't necessarily know that it's the child opting out of the parenting time schedule. What I think we have here is the court's recognition that the child is suffering and the child is troubled and having difficulty with the parenting time, thus the child entering into therapy. And there is no actual testimony by any experts, but there are many, many emails between the parties and the therapist stressing the importance of letting the child work through the issues, giving the child the if you want to say authority, the authority to say my mom will take me to therapy, the authority to say I'm struggling with the relationship, I need to work through it. The accusations in the contempt seem to be that my client is cheering her on and encouraging her not to attend parenting time. And I don't know necessarily that there's evidence of that except for father's perception of what's going on here. If anything, I think that the therapist is trying to work with the parties and the child. And I think the underlying issue with my client not bringing a motion to suspend or restrict parenting time or any sort of restriction in that respect is because she doesn't want that to happen. She wants them to have a relationship. She wants them to work through these things. At no point has she sought to suspend or restrict parenting time because that's not what she wants. She wants the children to have a good relationship with their father. She doesn't want to be in court litigating the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I've been involved in this case since 2014, and counsel's comments about mother encouraging parenting time, it's just not supported by the record. I mean, we were in court because it's dad's parenting time on a Wednesday. He's trying to pick daughter up from school and mom's there taking her during his time and interfering with that exchange. So we frame up that issue for the district court, and the order that we get back essentially suspends all of his parenting time. Doesn't even give him the option for supervised parenting time. So the appellant's ability to try to even counter any of these, findings by the court about endangerment, it was never framed up in a manner to give him an opportunity to be successful from the beginning. And that I think it strikes at the real heart of the problem here, which is that the district court turned off the parenting time with no mechanism in a meaningful way for him to turn it back on unless he garners the support and the agreement of the therapist, one of which, the child's therapist, he had significant disagreement with. That was part of the consternation at the motion hearing as to whether she would continue. So then the court conditions him being in joint therapy upon her approval when he was trying to seek to have her discharged for what he thought were very good reasons and issues between his relationship and Rose. From the appellant's perspective, this order sets an extremely dangerous precedent if affirmed, because essentially it's a way around Niece Peterson. It's a way around 518.18, and that the court can at any time just simply turn off parenting time with no mechanism for a litigant to come in and have a trial. And the due process rights of the appellant through this order have been significantly, if not completely, eliminated. Counsel makes comments about, well, why didn't you file for amended findings? At this point, it's, not once bitten, twice shy, but thrice bitten. The district court has made multiple orders in this case, which have been very concerning to the appellant. Returning to the district court to try to convince the judge that she got it wrong is not something that the appellant had to do to preserve his rights before this court. This order is so far outside of the bounds of 518.18 and Niece Peterson that reversal, we believe, is absolutely appropriate. And, at the center of this conflict, we have Rose, who does have relationship issues with dad. And for now, a year and 4 months, she's had no parenting time, not even a family access center visit. So I find that extremely troubling. And without the scheduling of an evidentiary hearing to hear evidence on an issue we know is in dispute, to suspend his parenting time is, in my opinion, abuse of discretion and requires reversal and remand. That's all I have, unless anyone else has any further questions for me at this time.
I do not believe yes, go ahead, Judge Brian.
Just quickly, I couldn't determine. It looked like the Wednesday evenings were not overnight time. And so if they're not overnight time, I don't know that I calculate the percentage of parenting time to be 25%. So the question is, assuming that that's not an overnight time, you're only looking at the first and third weekends, plus the holiday schedule, the winter break, spring break, that sort of thing. If your percentage is closer to 8% or 10%, does that change the decision-making in terms of, is this a substantial restriction such that the endangerment standard would apply?
Thank you, Your Honor. When the court looks at what is a substantial restriction, it's a fact-based inquiry. So going from even if it was just every other weekend, which I think is about 14% without the holiday time and the vacation time, going from 14 to zero to having no time, in my opinion, is still a substantial reduction in parenting time because it essentially eliminates his parenting time. So, but with the vacation time, with the holiday time, we're very close to that 25%, I think just over, given the parenting consultant's decision. But that's not really, I think, material for the court's determination. It's the complete restriction of his time. Therein, I think, lies the problem.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired or is close to expiring. Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.
Thank you.